now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix.
Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Today, I'm going to talk about a few subjects. DNA vaccinations, hang on to your hats. Wait till you hear this. The application, believe it or not, of belladonna, a known poison throughout the ages, onto baby teething products. Yes, you heard that right. Apparently, there's a recall because the incorrect amount of belladonna was put onto these teething products, as if any amount of a known poison is a correct amount. And then I'm going to talk about Chinese intelligence. I've talked in the recent past about China's interest in the Philippines, that they have a desire to maintain an economic hegemony, and they seek to expand their influence through business. But that's just the other side of the coin of their intelligence operations, because with the Chinese going all the way back to their still active secret societies, business, intelligence, and all manner of extra-legal, let's say, activities are the norm. And with Chinese intelligence and the Chinese communist expansionary efforts, their activities run the gamut, truly all across the spectrum, economically, intelligence gathering, influence peddling, etc., etc. So I will talk about that, because it's important that we understand how the Chinese communists operate. It's their brand of communism, and it's unique to them, and they're very good at it. Okay, about the vaccine DNA, DNA vaccinations, immunizations. What these psychopaths have done is come up with an idea whereby they inject the DNA of various pathogens. I don't know why I'm laughing. Be it influenza, just any kind of bug you can think of, they extract the genetic material from said bug, and then they, after processing it and doing all this other stuff, they create a DNA vaccination. And this is from the World Health Organization website, World Health Organization, the WHO, DNA vaccines. Vaccination consisting of stimulating the immune system with an infectious agent or components of an infectious agent modified in such a manner that no harm or disease is caused. Yeah, blarney. Now, that's a description of what we know as regular vaccines. Immunizations is the correct term. Further down the article, recently a radically new approach to vaccination has been developed. It involves the direct introduction into appropriate tissues of a plasmid containing the DNA sequence encoding the antigens against which an immune response is sought, and relies on the in situ production of the target antigen. This approach offers a number of potential advantages over traditional approaches, including the stimulation of both B and T cell responses, improved vaccine stability, right, the absence of any infectious agent, and the relative ease of large-scale manufacture. Now, let's just look at that last bit there. One of the so-called benefits is, the absence of any infectious agent, in contrast to regular vaccines where they put in so-called attenuated virus, which is really live virus, right? So they're basically saying here that this is better than the old vaccines, because the old vaccines give you live viruses. This approach offers a number of potential advantages over traditional approaches, including the stimulation of both B and T cell responses, improved vaccine stability, the absence of any infectious agent, and the relative ease of large-scale manufacture. The idea behind these DNA vaccinations is that they gather the genetic material from bacteria and other pathogens, let's say, and then synthesize that all into a vaccine, and then directly inject said vaccine into the muscle tissue of the the host, let's say. And the idea, get this, is for the muscular tissue to then produce its own antigens. And it will keep producing antigens till the host dies, okay? That could be, with the introduction of these new vaccines, that could be sooner than, rather than later, who knows? But let's be generous and say they live out a full, I don't want to say healthy life, but let's say they live to the age of 60 or something, right? In theory, their body will continue to produce these antigens over and over and over and over. Well, you want to talk about an immune response. You want to talk about a immune meltdown, over response, autoimmune response on steroids. Now, they're not going to go to the trouble of creating an injection that allows us to produce our own vitamin C. Like most animals on Earth, most mammals, they produce their own vitamin C within their bodies, right? Humans, paradoxically, for some reason, we're supposed to be the most advanced mammal form on the planet. We cannot produce our own vitamin C, go figure. Thank you, Anunnaki, very much. So instead of, like on a normal planet, right, them coming up with a vaccine to make us produce, say, more vitamin C because our bodies don't produce them for whatever reason. No, they got to stick the DNA of all these pathogens and influenza, who knows what else, salmonella, botulism. I don't know why I'm laughing. But, okay, keep your eyes on that DNA vaccination, and that's something that they may be pushing very soon in the near future, and there's no telling if they haven't already introduced that into people, willing subjects, volunteers, if you will, or to unwitting subjects. We know that they have done illegal experimentation on people for a long time now. Okay, the subject of teething products and homeopathic teething products that have belladonna in it, okay? Here's an article. It's interesting. It's from theage.com.au. It's a newspaper in Victoria, Australia. And February 16th, 2017, homeopathic teething products investigated over links to baby deaths sold in Australia. Homeopathic teething products investigated over links to 10 baby deaths in America are being sold in Australian pharmacies, including one at Melbourne's Royal Children's Hospital. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration warned last month that Highlands homeopathic teething tablets contain inconsistent amounts of the toxic substance belladonna and pose a risk to children. That sentence there is an oxymoron, okay? The U.S. Food and Drug Administration, BOO-HIS, warned last month that Highlands homeopathic teething tablets contain, quote, inconsistent amounts of the toxic substance belladonna and pose the risk to children, unquote. That's an oxymoron. I don't even know what to call that, because what's a consistent amount of belladonna? Belladonna is a known poison. You can just type in belladonna on the internet in a search engine, and it'll pull up all these articles about how belladonna, atropa belladonna, a deadly nightshade, has been utilized as poisons for ages. Here's an article from thepoisongarden.co.uk. For many, Atropa belladonna, deadly nightshade, is the star of the poison plants, right? Even WebMD, a shill for the pharma industry, says that belladonna can be poisonous, right? Okay, back to the article on The Age, website in Victoria, Australia. Continuing, it says, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration warned last month that Highlands homeopathic teething tablets contain inconsistent amounts of the toxic substance belladonna and pose a risk to children. It urged parents to dispose of the tablets and seek medical care immediately if children experience symptoms, including seizures, difficulty of breathing, or agitation. Australia's Therapeutic Goods Administration, TGA, that's the counterpart for the FDA, investigated Hyland's teething tablets and gel after the FDA issued a safety alert for both products in October last year, but it found no quality issues and said no action would be taken. Right? So that's the TGA, Therapeutic Goods Administration in Australia, saying, we don't see a problem with children, you know, teething on Belladonna-laced teething products. So, yeah, it's crazy. And further in the article, it says, according to one person, I was quite shocked that the pharmacy at Royal Children's Hospital was selling this stuff. I'm concerned parents may be gambling with their baby's health. Well, parents are always gambling with their parents', rather children's health these days. But again, it just underscores the essential lunacy and the topsy-turvy nature of this world we live in, where a known poison, which poisoners, assassins, people like that have used for ages, belladonna, to poison people, to assassinate people with, somehow winds up on children's teething products, right? Okay. Very unusual, and just symptomatic of the kind of wacky world we live in. Consumer alert, right? Again, this is all about being aware of the multiple threat environment in which we reside. This is not fear-mongering. This is, okay, the heads up. There's this scary product out there that's designed to sicken or even kill your children. Some more of that. So please be careful. Okay, now about Chinese intelligence. What the Chinese Communist Party has done is they've used a number of different agencies, business fronts, worldwide, global spanning business enterprises. They've worked with the Chinese triads, the Chinese underworld, the Chinese organized crime group, the triads. They've worked with intelligence agencies, and they work with countless ethnic Chinese around the world who are potential intelligence assets. Doesn't matter if they're a naturalized citizen of this, that, or the other country, and they've seemingly been a loyal citizen to that country for decades. The Chinese have a way of suborning some of these people and getting them to spy for the Chinese. And they're not only spies in some cases, they're passing along commercial, industrial, business, financial information, and military intelligence information. Some of the spies are more than spies, they're agents of influence. In other words, not only are they passing on everything they can get their hands on, but they're subtly and not so subtly using persuasion, intimidation, blackmail, coercion, manipulation, deception to influence the domestic and foreign policy of numerous governments around the world. So we'll take this in turn and talk about the various aspects of Chinese Communist intelligence. Okay, first you have the Chinese Communist Party, and then you have the Chinese PLA, People's Liberation Army. Now, the People's Liberation Army doesn't only refer to the army, the land forces. It's kind of a catch-all phrase, similar to Wehrmacht, right? A lot of people think that the Wehrmacht of World War II refers to the German army. No, it doesn't. German Wehrmacht referred to the German armed forces, which is the Kriegsmarine, the Navy, the Luftwaffe, the Air Force, and the Heer, H-E-E-R, the Army. Well, the Chinese PLA, People's Liberation Army, likewise is a umbrella term to denote the Chinese Army, Navy, and Air Force. And the Chinese PLA, People's Liberation Army, and its various intelligence gathering functions works hand in glove with corporations. Corporations set up by billionaire Chinese like Li Ka-shing. Li Ka-shing is a notorious Chinese billionaire who's created world-spanning corporations like Hutchison Whampoa, CITIC, which is China International Trust and Investment Corporation, which works closely with Costco, the state-owned China Overseas Trading Company. Li Ka-shing owns Hutchison Whampoa. He owns China International Trust and Investment Corporation. And working closely with Costco, the China state-owned China Overseas Trading Company, they have basically bought up control of a number of ports around the world. The Panama Canal, ports all over the place, ports in Mexico. And what they've done is these ports then become entry points for huge amounts of containers, which are basically uninspected, not inspected. There's been cases already where the Chinese were busted bringing in thousands of automatic weapons into American ports. I mean, who knows who the weapons are going to go to, right? And you have people like Li Ka-shing, this billionaire Chinese, and then you have other extremely wealthy Chinese like James Riady, R-I-A-D-Y. He became a crony of Bill Clinton during the Bill Clinton administration. He had unfettered access to the Oval Office, and he'd given millions of dollars to both Bill and Hillary Clinton. Again, influence peddling. This is why the Chinese were able, especially during the Clinton administration, to get away with so much espionage and so much influence peddling at the highest levels when the Clintons were in office. And to this day, the Chinese intelligence working through these billionaires, these Chinese billionaires who are fronting for Chinese intelligence, fronting for the Chinese People's Liberation Army. And they have countless assets, like I said, ethnic Chinese all over the place, many of whom do work for the Communist Chinese. Other well-known figures who have been influenced and bribed by the Chinese Communists are former Canadian Prime Minister Jean Chrétien, C-H-R-E-T-I-A-N, Chrétien. Former Canadian Prime Minister, was also involved in a scandal where the Chinese were paying him off buku loads of money in order to directly influence domestic and foreign policy. One of the appeals the Chinese use when they try to recruit people in the West or in any country for espionage or to be an agent in place, agent of influence, is the appeal of, well, if you scratch our back, we'll scratch yours. If you help us out, we'll open up all these business opportunities for you in China, in Macau, in Hong Kong, in Shanghai. We'll open up the whole Far Eastern market for whatever business enterprise or enterprises you have in mind, right? So they may not even have to even resort to covert funding into giving people actual money. They can just kind of grease the platform and make it easy for businesses, individual businessmen, consortiums to begin operating in the Far East. So it seems they have legitimate business cover. It seems they have a legitimate reason to be meeting with and interacting with Chinese businessmen. They seem to have a legitimate reason to go to the Far East to scout out their business prospects, their entrepreneurial prospects in China, mainland China, Hong Kong, elsewhere. So that is an appeal that they frequently use to suborn business people that have access to technologies, information, proprietary information that the Chinese want, because the Chinese have always been into industrial espionage, and they've been stealing all kinds of proprietary information for some time now. And also, when it comes to recruiting people within government, whether it's the American government, various agencies within the American government, the British government, the Australian government, you name it, they use all these different appeals as far as establishing businesses and making it so that when the politician retires from political life, they have options, business options for them in the Far East. And by so doing, they've managed to reel in a number of politicians throughout the Western world over a span of many decades. These recruited spies, although they may never refer to them as such, they, choose to use the fig leaf of, I'm just in it, I'm just interacting with these people for business purposes. And the Chinese hedge their bets. There's the well-known concept of the honey trap, what the old KGB called swallows, where they would set women up with targeted individuals, males, and targeted individuals in this context, being those that they want to suborn. So whether it's an Australian politician, businessman, an American politician, businessman, a British politician, businessman, you name it, they send in these really switched-on, business-savvy, multilingual Chinese women who are connected to Chinese intelligence to begin first cultivate what seems to be a business relationship or a cultural exchange relationship or educational cultural relationship, whatever the case may be. And in many cases, eventually these women establish intimate relations with these individuals they've gotten down as marks, as people they can hopefully exploit as intelligence assets, as agents of influence. And there's many such examples of that. All one has to do is do a Google search on such cases of Chinese women, influential Chinese women, wealthy women from wealthy Chinese backgrounds coming in and establishing relationships with males in this, that, or the other government. And after a period of time, pretty soon the guy is turning over hordes of information, hordes of classified government information and or proprietary business information. And then there's the whole other idea, a whole other concept, rather, of Chinese cyber espionage that's gone through the roof. The Chinese are past masters, in fact, one of the pioneers of cyber espionage and accessing information from various governments. In fact, the U.S. government admitted that the Chinese have actually accessed millions of personal files from the Office of Personnel Management, OPM. The OPM is the federal agency which is the initial entry point for everyone who wants to become a federal employee, whether they want to work for the Department of Agriculture, Treasury, the FBI, whatever, right? The military, armed forces, they have to be routed through the Office of Personnel Management, right? And then from there, the Office of Personnel Management will do the basic lower-level security background checks. And then if the person is pegged to have a higher security clearance, depending on what their job or their role will be, their profession, then the FBI and other agencies, Army Criminal Investigative Division, Army Counterintelligence Corps, if the person wants to gain employment with the Army, for example, as well as the FBI, or in the Navy, the Naval Criminal Investigative Service, etc., then, if the person is slated to have a higher security clearance, then those agencies will start to do the background checks. But it starts with, in many cases, the Office of Personnel Management, and go figure, the Chinese have hacked into a database and made off with countless files of people that have applied for federal jobs. So now they have all this information, personal information, background information of all these people, and the American government is admitted to this. Here's an article from the fake news website, the WashingtonPost.com, Dateline June 4th, 2015. Hackers working for the Chinese state breached the computer system of the Office of Personnel Management in December, U.S. officials said Thursday, and the agency will notify about 4 million current and former federal employees that their personal data may have been compromised. I think way more than 4 million. So let me read that paragraph again. Hackers working for the Chinese state breached the computer system of the Office of Personnel Management in December, U.S. officials said Thursday, and the agency will notify about 4 million current and federal former federal employees that their personal data may have been compromised. Now, because they've accessed all these files on all these people, many of whom have wound up in federal agency jobs, because of the Chinese ability to cyber snoop, then they can start doing their own background checks. Oh, look at this guy. He likes to go to strip clubs. We can blackmail him. Look at this person. He's a gambling addict. He's taken out his second, mortgage on his home to pay off the bookies he owes money to. Let's target him, right? So the implications are enormous. When we're saying that millions of current and federal federal employees, are now known to Chinese intelligence, that's a big deal. Now, here's an article by Wired Magazine. This is dated, let's see. It's called Inside the Cyber Attack That Shocked the U.S. Government. And I can't see the dateline, but anyway, here's the article. The U.S. Office of Personnel Management doesn't radiate much glamour. As the Human Resources Department for the federal government, the agency oversees the legal minutiae of how federal employees are hired and promoted and manages benefits and pensions for millions of current and retired civil servants. The core of its own workforce, numbering well over 5,000, is headquartered in a hulking Washington, D.C. building, the interior of which has all the charm of an East German hospital circa 1963. It's the sort of place where paper forms still get filled out in triplicate. The routine nature of OPM's business made the revelations of April 15, 2015, as perplexing as they were disturbing. And it goes on to say how a certain security engineer named Brendan Salisbury basically discovered that there was a mega hack that was going on. Soon after his shift started, Salisbury noticed that his decryption efforts had exposed an odd bit of outbound traffic, a beacon-like signal pinging to a site called opmsecurity.org, but the agency owned no such domain. That's pretty obvious. They should have made it, we're stealing your opminformation.org. The OPM-related name suggested it had been created to deceive. When Salisbury and his colleagues used a security program called Silence 5 to dig a little deeper, they located the signal source, a file called mcutil.dll, a standard component of software sold by security giant McAfee. I wouldn't call him a security giant, more like a blue screen of death giant. Thank you very much, McAfee. But that didn't make sense. OPM doesn't use McAfee products quite sensibly. Salisbury and the other engineers soon realized that that mcutil.dll was hiding a piece of malware designed to give a hacker access to the agency's servers. So basically, this article goes on to describe how this hack took place. And again, we're talking about an enormous number of former and current federal employees, many of whom are like in blackmailable status. I mean, as Henry David Thoreau said, countless people are living lives of quiet desperation. And some of those people that the Chinese now have access to their personal information, they're going to know their financial records. They're going to know their personal background records. They're going to know who within that family is married to a Chinese, ethnic Chinese, or a Chinese national, or a Chinese who's just gained their citizenship or their permanent residency, etc., etc. So the sky's the limit. We're talking about millions and millions of compromises, and the Chinese can take their sweet time trying to sort through all those files and determine exactly who to target. So keep that point in mind. The Chinese use influence peddling, the business in China as a carrot. And we haven't even talked about MSS, the Ministry of State Security. The Chinese MSS is, okay, think in terms of the Chinese CIA. And they also operate all over the world, far-flung intelligence operations, business operations. And, you know, make no mistake about it, Chinese intelligence, the Chinese communists, they are as deep black, they are as treacherous and sinister as all the rest of them. Drug trafficking, human trafficking, assassinations, blackmail, etc., etc. And because of their ability to access so many ethnic Chinese, and it's a numbers game, all they got to do is just go through all these ethnic Chinese all over the world. Eventually, they're going to find some people who are going to want to do something to help Mother China. And now China has reeled out the so-called One Belt, One Road strategy. And what that refers to is, and I'm reading from a website, it's an official Australian website, Parliament of Australia, China's One Belt, One Road initiative. The One Belt, One Road initiative is a foreign policy and economic strategy of the People's Republic of China. The term derives from the overland, quote, Silk Road economic belt, unquote, and the 21st century maritime Silk Road, unquote. Concepts introduced by PRC President Xi Jinping in 2013. These are the two major axes along which China proposes to economically link Europe to China through countries across Eurasia and the Indian Ocean. The OBOR initiative also links to Africa and Oceania. In March 2015, the PRC issued an action plan for realizing this initiative. While the OBOR, China's One Belt, One Road initiative, is being coordinated by China's National Development and Reform Commission, it also heavily involves the ministries of foreign affairs and commerce. Key point there, foreign affairs and commerce work through COSCO, the aforementioned COSCO, which is a state organization that is involved in overseas trade, overseas shipping, trade, mercantilism, and again, the latter works hand in glove with billionaire Li Ka-shing's outfits, Hutchison Whampoa, and CITIC, the aforementioned CITIC. Here is an article from SourceWatch, and they talk a bit about Li Ka-shing. Li Ka-shing, who owns the huge shipping firm Hutchison Whampoa Limited, and again, Hutchison Whampoa Limited owns all these ports all over the world, right? And the giant Far East investment firm, Cheong Kong Holdings, was also a member of the boards of directors of the China International Trust and Investment Corporation, CITIC. In a Newsmax article, CITIC is the bank of the Chinese Army, People's Liberation Army, or PLA. Actually, that's wrong. PLA is the armed forces, not just the army, providing financing for Chinese Army weapon sales and Western technology purchases. CITIC is known to have set up Chinese arms front companies such as Poly Technologies. CITIC also owns a controlling interest in the Hong Kong-based Asia Satellite Telecom Company. Again, China is getting into all these telecoms, all these telecommunications industries all over the place. Or AsiaSat. AsiaSat, a company founded in 1988, operates several communication satellites in the Far East, bought from U.S. manufacturers such as Hughes. From the same article, it goes on to describe what Hutchison Whampoa Limited is. Hutchison Whampoa Limited is a Hong Kong-based commercial empire founded and largely owned by Chinese multi-billionaire Li Ka-shing. The Center for Security Policy, BU, reported in August 2002 that U.S. intelligence believed that Li, who was closely tied to the communist leadership in Beijing, turned Hutchison into a global colossus described in a recent company press release as having over 120,000 employees worldwide, far more than that, operating and investing in five core businesses in 37 countries, far more than that, telecommunications, ports and related services, property and hotel, retail and manufacturing, and energy and infrastructure. The center noted that, quote, one of Hutchison's subsidiaries secured long-term leases at either end of the Panama Canal in 1999 and was in 2002, quote, hard at work acquiring a presence for China at other strategic choke points, quote unquote, around the world, including notably the Caribbean's Bahamas, the Mediterranean's Malta, and the Persian Gulf Straits of Hormuz. They've got it all going on. At a moment inconvenient to the United States, such access could translate into physical or other obstacles to our use of such waterways. Now, normally, I pay scant attention to these think tanks like the American Enterprise Institute, Frank Gaffney. They're all just a bunch of Zionist shills. The Near East Policy Institute, same thing, and the Center for Security Policy. But when in this particular article, yes, they're in the main, in general, what they're saying about the Chinese is correct. Here is another article. From MexicaData.info from March 5, 2007. Chinese ownership of Mexican port causing worry. By Nancy Conroy. Chinese control of worldwide port facilities is an issue that should be re-examined in light of recent concerns about rising Chinese influence around the globe. The Chinese company Hutchison Whampoa, owned by Chinese billionaire Li Ka-shing, should be Li Cha-ching, controls 35 major ports in the world, more than that, including the four most important ports in Mexico. Hutchison is about to build a brand new port at Punta Colonet, a Baja California cove located just 2 hours south of the U.S. border. In the event of a conflict with China, a Chinese-built and controlled port so close to the U.S. could potentially function as a staging area for for hostile activities. Boy, howdy. Also, the U.S. should keep an eye on Hutchison's remarkably friendly relationship with the Mexican government. Hutchison Ports Holding, part of the Hutchison Whampoa Group, runs 35 ports, including the Bahamas, Buenos Aires, two on the Panama Canal, and again, it is owned by Li Ka-shing, China's most influential billionaire, who was known as, quote, the Superman of the Orient, unquote. In 2003, Forbes magazine ranked him fifth among the world's 10 most powerful billionaires behind Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, Silvio Berlusconi, and Rupert Murdoch. Talk about a rogues gallery there. A 1998 declassified Army intelligence report stated Li Ka-shing, the owner of Hutchison Whampoa Limited, is directly connected to Beijing and is willing to use his business influence to further the aims of the Chinese government. During the public debate over the Panama Canal turnover in 1999, several members of Congress expressed concern about Hutchison's control of ports on both sides of the canal. The critics argued that Hutchison's involvement essentially meant that control of the strategic waterway was being handed over to the communist Chinese government. Thank you very much, Clinton administration. And let me talk about what a choke point is, okay? Around the world, there are these strategic choke points, right? Okay, think of, well, the much-disputed Spratly Islands right there in the South China Sea, right? That the Chinese are always squabbling over with the Philippines. That's a choke point. The used to be called the Formosa Strait, that separates Taiwan, nationalist Taiwan, from the communist mainland. That's a choke point. The Panama Canal is a choke point. The Straits of Hormuz is a choke point. Anywhere where you have commercial merchant shipping and military naval warships going through in both directions, that is a choke point. Malta in World War II, a major strategic choke point. This is one of the reasons why the Germans weren't able to hold on to North Africa. Well, there was a number of reasons, but a big reason was their inability to subdue Malta. Malta became an unsinkable aircraft carrier. Ditto Gibraltar. And the RAF would be able to send out planes to harass Italian and German shipping and warships in the Mediterranean. It became a choke point. And also, there are choke points, and has been for some time, for submarines, okay? They know through human intelligence, through satellite imagery, that certain submarines are homeported, based in certain places. You have, they're up, for the Americans, they're up in Washington State. I think those are the, I can't remember if they're, some of my listeners help me here, if they're fast attack boats, you know, hunter killer boats that track Soviet, rather Russian submarine, nuclear missiles, submarines. And then there's places like Point Loma, San Diego. I don't know about now, but used to. There used to be submarine pens there, right? And so, for some of these countries, they know where these submarines are based at, right? And so, what the U.S. does, for example, is they use these, what's called SOSIS, Sound Surveillance System, underwater, under the ocean, SOSIS. And this has all been mentioned in open published sources. What they do is these are arrays of hydrophones, and they're connected to a computer system, a computer database, which logs all the underwater sounds that go on. Supposedly, the SOSIS database is so extensive, it knows what the sound of krill in mating season is, right? Supposedly it knows krill is a little tiny shrimp, and they make a distinct, unique sound when it's mating season, apparently, right? And in the SOSIS computer database, it has the unique acoustic signature of all these different warships, submarines, commercial vessels. They each have their own distinct acoustic signature, because the propellers, the screws, they turn a certain way, they leave a certain sound, right? And so what they do is, when they know these subs, for example, are going to come through a choke point, when they leave their home port, they set up all these hydrophone arrays, these SOSIS sensors, underwater. And they'll know, okay, just by the sound of it, this particular submarine, because we know it by its sound, the sound of this of the drive system is well known to our computer database. We can tell you for sure that this submarine has left this home port, has gone through this choke point where all this other naval and merchant seagoing traffic has to go through. It's now headed out to the open sea, okay? So, but what the Chinese have done is establishing control of all these choke points, right? And again, it just the damage that the Clintons have done. You know, I'm not one who buys into the false left-right paradigm. They're all traitors. They're all sewer scum on both sides of the aisle, right? Republicans, Democrats, conservative, labor, they're all the same. Liberal labor, it doesn't matter, they're all bought and paid for. But what they did was, the Clintons did when they left office, by handing over the Panama Canal to the Chinese, is so damaging to national security interests for the U.S. Not that they ever gave a rat's ass of U.S. national security interests, but, and then also because the Chinese have such close ties with the Mexican government, there have been stories for decades of Chinese troops not only being just on the other side of the U.S. border, just south of Texas, but actually straying over into Texas, right? Straying over into U.S. territory, Chinese military troops, right? So this is a key point to remember. Those choke points, if they're controlled by the Chinese, they will absolutely refuse entry to U.S. naval vessels, right? In World War II, the U.S. had the luxury of transferring naval vessels from the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific Ocean because they controlled the Panama Canal. The Panama Canal was a far more strategic strategically important target than Pearl Harbor. Pearl Harbor, those old battleships were intentionally hung out to dry. Precisely, this is a whole nother story which I won't get into, but they were left out there as decoys. The naval commander prior to Admiral Husband E. Kimmel, he demanded the right to patrol the sea lanes, the direct sea lanes from Japan straight towards the Hawaiian Islands, but of course Franklin Roosevelt did not allow him to do that. Go figure, right? Because if they aggressively patrolled the sea lanes from Japan, the shortest, straightest route from Japan to Pearl Harbor, eventually they would have intercepted the Kido Butai, the carrier strike force, right? They didn't want that to happen. The American Navy had already war-gamed decades before the possibility, indeed the likelihood, that the Japanese would launch a carrier-borne airstrike against the Hawaiian Islands. They'd already determined that a long time before Pearl Harbor. So that's why the commander prior to Husband E. Kimmel demanded the right to be able to patrol the sea lanes, right? And then he was sacked, he was fired. And then, you know, the Patsy scapegoat, Admiral Husband E. Kimmel, was next. That was appointed next. The point of relevance is that the Panama Canal was a far more strategic prize. If the Japanese strike force had just gone all the way down and, you know, bombed the Panama Canal, that would have... Let's say they bombed the oil storage tanks in Hawaii and then went, you know, had another task force bomb the Panama Canal. The U.S. would have been in a deep smell situation, put it that way. But now with the Chinese controlling, and I don't know about now, but it was alleged in the 90s that the Chinese had gained control of ports like Long Beach, California, okay? Long Beach, California. So they're controlling all these choke points, which means they have their own version of SOSUS, their own hydrophone arrays. So when U.S. warships, the surface vessels leave places like San Diego or Norfolk, Virginia, and the subs leave places like Point Loma and where are they in Washington State? Bremerton, someplace like that. And they leave their home ports, the Chinese will have their own acoustic sensors. They will know through satellite imagery, through all their spies there on the ground, and all else fails, they'll have their sensors under the ocean that will detect the sound of the U.S. submarines leaving. Actually, if memory serves, the old diesel-powered submarines were quieter than the nuclear submarines. That may have changed over time. They may have made the nuclear submarines more quiet. But in the old days, it was always the diesel subs that were quieter. So that's another issue. The Chinese buying up all these ports and establishing these cushy relations with the Mexican government to the point where Chinese troops are straying over the border into Texas. And I heard also New Mexico. Here's an article by Al Santoli. If it's the same guy I'm thinking about, he wrote a great book about Vietnam War veterans called Everything We Had. It's an anthology of the stories of all these different, all branches of the service, nurses, doctors, military people, about their experiences in Vietnam. And check out the chapter in there about the U.S. Navy SEAL Scout and what they did in the Phoenix program in Vietnam. Make your head spin. Anyway, he wrote this article, Al Santoli, China rapidly expanding operations in Cuba, Peru, Venezuela, ports company in Panama, Bahamas linked to Chinese military intel. May 12th, the Hong Kong-based Hutchison Whampoa ports firm intends to bid for the administration of Peru's El Cayo port terminal on the Pacific coast, according to Peru's foreign ministry, reports the Beijing Xinhua news agency. Hutchison Whampoa has invested more than $100 million to modernize its ports on the Atlantic and Pacific ends of the Panama Canal. Editor note, Hutchison Whampoa, which is part owned by China Resources Enterprise, has been identified by the U.S. Senate as a front for Chinese military intelligence, and owner Li Ka-shing has close ties to the Chinese government. Hutchison also operates the prominent Freeport facility in the Bahamas. Again, you have Florida, you have the Bahamas, you have the choke point between the Florida and Bahamas, okay? May 16th, the Chinese are betting on Venezuela, said the late President Hugo Chavez. I think he's late, if memory serves. Further down the article, May 29th, the Canadian government ignored warnings by counterintelligence officials and permitted China's state-owned China Overseas Trading Company, the aforementioned Costco shipping company, also named Costco in some countries, not to be confused with the Costco chain in America, to make Vancouver the only major point on the west coast of North America without a dedicated police force. Don't worry, I'm sure the Chinese will provide their own. The gateway for its operations in North America, reports Fabian Dawson in the Vancouver province. Okay, let me read that again. May 29th, the Canadian government ignored warnings by counterintelligence officials and permitted China's state-owned China Overseas Trading Company, Costco, to make Vancouver the only major port on the west coast of North America without a dedicated police force, the gateway for its operations in North America. And you have to remember also, there's a large ethnic Chinese population in Vancouver, British Columbia in general. Indeed, during World War II, the British Special Operations Executive and the American OSS recruited a lot of ethnic Chinese from British Vancouver, BC Vancouver, for operations against the Japanese in the Far East, okay? Article goes on to say, Costco is intimately linked to China International Trust and Investment Corporation, the aforementioned CITIC, a key fundraiser for the Chinese government and technology acquiring source for China's military. U.S. Senate and Canadian intelligence officials have described Costco as the merchant marine for China's military. Costco vessels have been caught carrying assault rifles into California and Chinese missile technology and biological chemical weapons components into North Korea, Pakistan, Iraq, and Iran, according to U.S. intelligence reports. Take some of that with a grain of salt, but the capability, the potential for all of that certainly exists. In addition, Canadian law enforcement agencies have warned that Chinese triad criminal organizations are active in and around Canada's ports. Boy, howdy. Okay? So, they've got it all going on. They got Costco, they got CITIC, they got a billionaire guy, Li Ka-shing, working through the triads, working through state-owned Costco, working through the Chinese PLA, Army, Navy, Air Force, working through MSS, Ministry of State Security, countless ethnic Chinese all over the place. No, I'm not, you know, doing a witch hunt, reds under the beds thing. Don't look askance at every single ethnic Chinese you see, right? But just be aware that the potential for all this espionage, all this deception, and the potential, and it's already being realized, have been for some time, of the Chinese to just buy up all kinds of corporations, national resources, all over the place. Like what the Chinese do is, okay, in the recent past, the Chinese wanted to build, get this, in New South Wales, they wanted to build a full-scale replica of the Forbidden City, right? Now, this, imagine the environmental impact alone, where they would just have to tear down all this, you know, native vegetation, terrain, all the gum trees, right? All the possums, all the animals in the forest. They were thinking of tearing all that down and then setting up their own full-scale replica of the Forbidden City. And of course, to do this, they would have had to work through the local councils, the state government, the federal government, you know, and all this backsheesh and all these shekels, you know, passing hands, etc., etc. Now, the appeal they were using, of course, is, oh, look, we have this big theme park, amusement park, Forbidden City. Just think of all the, you know, local Australians that will be employed. No. what they would do. Thankfully, this whole project has been shelved for the time being. Okay, for whatever reason, it's not going ahead, but that may change in the future. But I'm just, you know, mentioning this as an example. What the Chinese would have done is what they've done all along, is instead of hiring local talent, they would just have a group visa, which they would have been able to work through the immigration and work through the government and say, we're going to have a group visa and bring thousands of our employees to work, you know, the Forbidden City, because after all, you know, they look the part, right, of Chinese. We can dress them up in period outfits so they look like older, you know, period Chinese people, and they'll be the ones cooking the Chinese food, because who else is better at cooking Chinese food than Chinese, right? So that whole appeal of the replica Forbidden City will create thousands of jobs, that's a red herring. It would never come to pass. They'll just do what they've always done. They'll just get a group visa and they'll maneuver that through the various governments in question, because they've, you know, bribed and paid off so many politicians, and all the way down to the local council level, all the way up to the federal level. And then they'll just have all these workers come in from China. Some of them absolutely will be intelligence trained, intelligence operatives. And they'll be the ones, you know, waiting on you at the restaurants. They'll be the ones, you know, helping with your travel arrangements, you know, when you want to go to China and see the real thing, et cetera, et cetera. So, and also consider the fact that the Chinese, they own most of the treasury notes. They've been essentially, it used to be the petrodollar recycling scam, where especially the OPEC nations were manipulated, coerced, whatever the case may be, into recycling a lot of their dollars, petrodollars, back into the U.S. Treasury system, thereby financing the interest on the national debt, just to keep the whole scam going. Well, what the Chinese did, being savvy businessmen, they got into this act as well. They began buying up all these usual U.S. Treasury notes, essentially buying up the U.S. debt. And now they're literally holding the U.S. debt as blackmail, basically. On top of everything else, they can say, no, we're not doing this anymore. We're not buying up all these U.S. Treasury notes. You can sink all you debt-encumbered, fiat currency-encumbered, U.S. federal note, toilet paper-encumbered nations, especially the U.S. We're not buying your Treasury notes up anymore, because we can do that. We bought them and we can stop buying them, okay? So just look at the potential. Okay, we'll start from the beginning, the influence peddling. All these politicians, all these businessmen, all these startup companies in the now the cybersecurity field is rapidly expanding. Thank you very much, Stuxnet, and all these other malware and viruses being sent out by all these cyber spooks. And even before that, the cybersecurity industry has been a growing industry. And now what the Chinese are doing also, they're financing a lot of these startup cybersecurity firms and all these other telecoms and all these other cybersecurity firms and branching out all over the place, right? So keep all this in mind, because you have the whack jobs at American Enterprise Institute that have been screaming for war with China for a long time, right? And all that implies, which could rapidly escalate and turn into a nuclear war. Keep in mind that the Chinese have gained control of all these strategic choke points around the world, okay? Why did the Israelis, the French, and the British invade the Suez Canal in 1956? Because Nasser nationalized the Suez Canal. He said, nope, all you foreign countries, you ain't doing this anymore, right? This is ours. The same way that Mossadegh nationalized Anglo-Persian oil in Iran in 53, and then the CIA and before them British intelligence, MI6, ganged up on him, overthrew him, right? Well, Nasser nationalized the Suez Canal, another strategic choke point. Next thing you know, British Paris are falling out of the sky. French Paris are falling out of the sky, right? So that's an example of a strategic choke point. China has rapidly gained control of all these choke points over the world. Does the U.S. really want to poke a fight against the Chinese? What? And I'm not saying this for the betterment of the crony capitalist, the perps and the manipulators that pollute all the Western governments. I'm saying this to those of you out there who have business interest, right? And you want to ensure that the spreading scourge of, you know, the Chinese communist triad manipulation doesn't impact in any way on your enterprises, on your business. Just keep all that in mind. We also have people like Wen Ho Li, who stole all kinds of nuclear weapons secrets from Los Alamos National Labs. He actually obtained information out of the X Division, where they developed the warheads. He apparently gave past information to the Chinese about the, I think it was called the W-88, which was the most sophisticated warhead the U.S. had at the time. It was designed for the Trident nuclear missiles that are shot out of ballistic nuclear submarines, nuclear missile subs. So we also have that element too. Anyhow, there's a lot more I could say about this, but you know, I'll just leave it at that. I spoke last week about how the Chinese, they have so much financial economic interest through the very busy sea lanes in Indonesia, coming back and forth from the Philippines, from Japan, etc., etc. And that's why they're loath to see, you know, the Philippines erupt into turmoil once again. Oh, it's just been confirmed. The U.S. Special Forces, we've known this for a long time, are actively operating against ISIS, IROL, in the Philippines. The Philippines had long, the U.S. had long operated Special Operations Forces in the Philippines, in the Subic Bay area, and then later on to deal with Abu Sayyaf and Central and especially Southern Philippines. They were operating out of ZAM, i.e. Zamboanga. The U.S. Special Operations Forces have been. So this is nothing new. They just announced it, which means they're bringing in more and more SOF, Special Operations Forces. And China has a keen interest in the Philippines. They have a lot of ethnic Chinese there. Absolutely, they do. They don't want, the Philippines to wind up having another puppet dictator like Marcos for so many decades. Okay. Anyhow, that's it for this week's segment of Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Wherever you may be, dear listeners, have a very pleasant time, and we'll see you next week.